This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's the Steve Gruber Show, stevegruber.com, 888-900-9966, the Common Sense Hotline. If you want to join the conversation, straight ahead today, we'll have Attorney General Bill Schuette from Michigan here talking about the RNC and the DNC. Congressman Pete Hoekstra will be here. Spent some time with him last week in Cleveland. A guy who spent many years was the chair of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee. No, it's not an oxymoron. It's the truth. And Julie Gundlach will be here. Don't miss her because she'll be all fired up. You know, she's part of that Never Trump deal. Well, if you're saying never Trump, well, I don't know if she's that hardcore anymore, but if you're saying that, then you're voting for Hillary Clinton, and you wonder where that's going to go. All the polling now showing Donald Trump is winning currently. He got a big bounce out of his convention. We'll see if Hillary Clinton gets the same. It's been a raucous convention in Philadelphia. You haven't seen it all. I mean, there are videos of protesters scaling the walls. That's right, walls that they built around the DNC. You would think that they'd be against such things. Something you may have missed this week, though, and I want to share with you is Congressman Hank Johnson is a Democrat from Georgia. He is a piece of work. And earlier this week, he made some disparaging remarks about Israelis, calling them termites because of their settlements in the West Bank and elsewhere, saying they are termites into Palestinian lands, anti-Semitic comments blatantly, and it just goes right along with the comments that were revealed in all the DNC emails that were anti-black, anti-gay, anti-Jew, and the list goes on of what was released in those DNC emails, not to mention that the whole process was rigged to get Hillary Clinton elected and Bernie Sanders people never really had a chance. They never had a chance. Hillary and Bill Clinton had organized and orchestrated this thing from the time they fumbled 8 years ago, from the time they fumbled the deal 8 years ago until now. They have been planning and scheming how to get the top office in the land. But this Hank Johnson is out there, this congressman from Georgia. And I wanted to share something I found from Hank Johnson. He's talking to a general at a congressional hearing. And he goes through this painful explanation of the size of Guam, the American territory Guam, and how many people live there, and how big the island is. And it's 17 miles long and 7 miles wide, and goes through this whole thing. And then he's talking about, well, there's too many people live on Guam. And he's really worried about too many people living on Guam. But not for the reasons you might think. Just listen to this, because this is an eye-opener of who represents the Democratic Party today in America. Here's Congressman Hank Johnson, a Democrat from Georgia, talking about the dangers of overpopulating Guam. Go.
My fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
Huh?
We don't anticipate that.
The general, we don't anticipate that. No, I don't anticipate Guam is going to tip over and capsize because it has too many people living there. And then this genius of the Democratic Party, who is an incumbent, who's been elected to several terms now, you have to ask about who are the people voting for this clown. He goes on then to shift his focus to global warming. Well, if the island's not going to tip over, then surely we must concern ourselves with global warming. These are the geniuses setting policy for you and I in America. And if you didn't believe it, we're going to run it one more time right here for you, just so you can enjoy this and tell your friends that the Democrats believe Guam. If there's one more baby born here, my God, this island could tip right over and capsize. Roll him again, just for fun.
My fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that.
We don't anticipate that. The general's so calm and cool. Well, that's the beauty of it. You know, we don't anticipate that. No, sir. We don't anticipate that, you know, if we have another 20, because they're talking about putting a military base there. If we have another 20,000 Marines that are on Guam, it's not going to capsize. And if you ever wonder what was wrong with America today, my God, there is an eye-opener for you. There it is, front and center for all to see. It's a little frightening. All right, so speaking of frightening, tonight at the Democratic National Convention, Barack Obama will be on the stage. Joe Biden will be on the stage, as will Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine just not being very well received. The Bernie people certainly are not thrilled with Tim Kaine being there. No, they're not thrilled with him being there at all. And so I don't think he helped the ticket at all. And then you look at the message. What is the message after last night? You know, Bill Clinton can charm the crowd, you know. You know, he's a serial sex offender, but don't concern yourself with that. He can charm the crowd, and he's a guy that makes you smile. And I don't despise Bill Clinton. Maybe I should, but there he is. But the question that I'm asking you is Hillary, is it steady Hillary and steady leadership? Is that what we're going for? Or is she the agent of change? Is she the change maker, or is she the steady Eddie person that we want here? Because I'm getting mixed messages here. I'm a little confused. Do you see my problem here? Because on one hand, they're saying, well, she's the change. She's the real change. And then there's this desperate attempt. That was the whole, I met a girl. Bill Clinton's I met a girl speech. I mean, really? And all you can feel is a little creeped out by that because of all of these girls he met and all the stories you've heard that you know are true of him forcing women to do all sorts of things. And biting their lips and different things that went on, injuring people, and sneaking in and out of the governor's mansion in Arkansas, and sneaking people around during the White House years. Monica Lewinsky, does that ring a bell with you? But they're doing all of these things to try to humanize Hillary Clinton, to reintroduce Hillary Clinton. If you don't know Hillary Clinton by now, then you never will. And here's the president giving this long first spouse wannabe yarn about like it's some sort of romance story. He is a pig when it comes to women. You can like his policies all you want, but Bill Clinton's a pig when it comes to women. There's no two ways about it. And he talked about how smitten he was and how taken, and he says they're best friends. Best friends, they don't even talk to each other. It's the Steve Gerber Show. We'll be right back.
Touch with Michigan and the world.
It's 18 after on the Steve Gruber Show. SteveGruber.com, 888-900-9966, the Common Sense Hotline. Encourage your conversation. During the RNC last week in Cleveland, I ran into a lot of prominent Michigan Republicans, as you can imagine. One of those being Attorney General Bill Schuette, who I spent some time talking to, as I usually do. And he's joining us on the phone now to kind of recap what went on in Cleveland, what he's watching see in Philadelphia as well. Mr. Schuette, welcome back to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you and Ivy and your team. It was fun seeing you in Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, we had a good effort down there, and I know you were involved. You're on the floor for a lot of it. It's kind of funny that the Republicans had a couple of speed bumps, Ted Cruz being the biggest of the week, and it got tremendous amount of coverage. And yet The DNC comes to near meltdown. It just doesn't seem that the news media gives it equal coverage. I don't think it's not quite fair, balanced coverage, would you say?
You know, I think there is some of that, and obviously there is a huge, you know, problem in Philadelphia, because it was revealed, as you know, no surprise, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, you know, in deep into the Clinton playbook and in her corner, and the system was rigged, and so no surprise.
The fix was in from the start, absolutely. And then what I found more disturbing, though, were the comments about black women's names and about using Bernie Sanders' Jewish heritage against him in Kentucky and West Virginia, or atheism, and then, you know, disparaging remarks about Hispanics, all sorts of things. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is gone, but if it were my organization, if it were your organization, we'd have gotten out the broom and cleaned the whole place.
Well, you know, spring cleaning can happen in the summertime, and your point well taken. And you know, the Hillary Clinton is the Republicans' great unifier. It is amazing, you know. And everyone had their own presidential candidate. There were 17, right? It was the Thunderdome. 17 people enter, one person emerges. And the fact is, Hillary has brought us all together. And in terms of, it'd be disastrous if Hillary Clinton ran the country. I'm not going to turn the keys of America over to Hillary. And that really is bringing so many Republicans over to say, okay, we got to stop Hillary. That's for sure.
Yeah. So the Never Trump people, I mean, there's a few left, but honestly, if it's Never Trump, then that means you're supporting Hillary Clinton. And we all know what that means. I mean, we may have a lot of questions about Donald Trump, and I have a lot of questions about Donald Trump and what he would do and how he would behave. But I have no question about what she would do.
Right, and here's the key with, and you said it correctly, and the point is, the Supreme Court is in the balance, and the next president will appoint likely maybe up to 3 Supreme Court justices over a period of time, and the point there is, with Donald Trump as president, you'll get justices with the judicial philosophy of Antonin Scalia, a rule of law justice appointed, instead of the Obama, Clinton, Ruth Bader Ginsburg type of philosophy. And that's important. I think people understand that in terms of rule of law, defending the Constitution, not making things up. That's critical. And I think that'll move a lot of people into the Republican corner. And, you know, the point is, we have to have big aspirations. I want to win it all in Michigan. I want to maintain a majority in the Republican House of Representatives, a rule of law Michigan Supreme Court justices, a congressional race in the UP, in Traverse City area, another one, Wahlberg down south. And, you know, you have to have aspirations on everything. You have to be all in. If you say, well, I want a couple of races, but I don't care about the others, that doesn't work.
We're on the line with Attorney General Bill Schuette here from Michigan, talking politics and the Republican National Convention and where we go from here. I am concerned that through the entire first day of the convention, we heard nothing about foreign policy, nothing about terrorists. We see a priest gets beheaded in Normandy, France, by ISIS terrorists that come into a church service. Maybe it's church place violence and not terrorism, according to our administration. But clearly, these horrible things continue to happen, and not one comment about that. And I find that a big disconnect of the reality of the world today.
Well, here's the issue. The fact is, globally, the American presence has diminished. The fact is, our allies don't trust us. They cannot count on us because of the administration of President Obama. Our adversaries don't fear us, and that means chaos overseas. And what we don't want to do is have more terrorist attacks on our homeland. So we need to have a strong hand, a strong national offensive capability where our word counts, and we need support to Israel. And the Obama administration has been, you know, totally lacking in that. And that's really, we need to rebuild, regroup. No apologies for a strong America. It doesn't mean that we're the world's policemen, but it does mean that we send a strong message that NATO counts, that and we're not going to have Russian encroachment, and we're going to stop ISIS.
All right, Attorney General Bill Schuette, I heard you say a moment ago, and we only have about a minute left here or so, but I heard you say a minute ago, I want to win it all in Michigan. That was the quote 2 minutes ago right here on this program. I want to win it all in Michigan. So are you running for governor? I have to ask. You know, there it is. I want to win it all in Michigan. That's your quote. I just heard you say it.
Yeah. I want to win it all in 2016 in Michigan. We'll have plenty of time for the other. Nice try. That was clever, though.
That was good. Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I do the best I can, you know.
I know. You do just fine, man.
Yeah. But, I mean, I suppose it's something. I mean, your name's out there. I know there's fundraising going on. It's you and there's a couple of other usual suspects in that conversation. And honestly, it's something we all believe that you're going to consider at some point. And I'll give you 20 seconds for the last word.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. The fact is we have big aspirations in 2016, plenty of time in 2017 to work on 18. But the fact is, to win in 2018 in Michigan, we need to have our strongest, toughest, fiercest warrior because the Democrats and the radical left want to go back. I want to go higher.
And I'm with you on that one. Attorney General Bill Schuette, always appreciate you when you stop by.
Thank you.
There you have it. Bill Schuette, everybody, here on the program. You know, I would be surprised if he didn't join that race because he is a fighter for Michigan. We'll find out. Some other good names on that list as well. 25 after on a Wednesday here. It's the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Wednesday here on the program is the Steve Gruber Show. Find out more at stevegruber.com. You can get podcasts there. You can also listen live at your office on your smartphone. Go to stevegruber.com. For those services, plus the hotline number, the Common Sense hotline number, 888-900-9966. Our next guest I ran into in Cleveland while we were out, outside of the barriers, outside the walls, former Michigan congressman, former chair of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee, talked about all sorts of things and wanted to have him here on the program because so many things are going on that give me pause, that concern me about what's going on in the world. So former Congressman Pete Hoekstra here with us. Congressman, welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
Hey, glad to have you. Listen, you know, there are so many things going on. One of the things I asked you when we were sitting there just kind of having a casual moment was simply this. Do you miss it? Do you miss being, you know, in the arena, as it were?
Sure, you miss it. It was an honor. It was exciting, and it was... It was good to be part of it, but at the same time, after 18 years of being in it, you're not clawing, or I'm not looking for a way to get back into the arena. I enjoyed it. I had my run, and so I'm doing just fine.
For the sake of argument, if there was a Trump administration and they reached out to you, would you consider working in an administration involving Donald Trump?
Absolutely. They thought they had a role where I could help the Trump administration, where they thought I might be able to help move his agenda and contribute to the work and the efforts that are going on in this country. Of course, you would consider it, but it's not something that I'm planning on.
All right, so let's talk about Donald Trump a little bit and foreign policy. Obviously, something you know a lot about as the chairman of the U.S. House Intelligence Committee for many, many years. One of the conversations that keeps coming up, it's persistent, in fact, is this conversation over NATO and where it's going. Now, Donald Trump pointing out again yesterday that the United States pays about 70% of the bill for NATO, and only four or five countries actually contribute as per their agreement to help foot the bill. And he says, listen, we're $20 trillion in debt. We can't foot the bill for everybody. It's not 40 years ago anymore. People have to step up and be involved. So, what do you make of that? What do you make of NATO? What do you make of his comments? Because he's got a tremendous amount of negative pushback from people. He doesn't know what he's doing. It's reckless. It's dangerous. It sends the wrong message. How do you look at it?
No, I look at it as very, very practical, and I think the American people probably agree with him. Number one, we are committed to NATO. I'm sure he's committed to NATO. But he's not committed to a NATO where the structure and the framework for NATO is the United States, and everything else has just kind of been hollowed out. He's committed to the relationship. He's committed to our allies. But as such, he's asking for something from them in return. It's like in any good relationship. You've got to be committed, but the people in the organization that you are committed to, they have responsibilities as well. And what he's saying is we're not going to foot the bill for NATO, for Europe's security. We've all got to be invested in this. And if, you know, if you decide that you're not invested in it and it's not a good value for you, then, you know, we've got to look at the relationship as well. But I think he's just sending out clear notice. We can't pay for all of this. The money that you should be using for defense, you know, you may be using it for social programs. You may be using it for other things. You may be using it up. You may be using those dollars to prop up your economy, to compete against U.S. businesses and to compete for U.S. jobs. It's kind of like, no, I have expectations. And when you're doing an agreement with the United States, we're going to make sure that we all have skin in the game.
And I think that's fair. I think that's appropriate. I think everybody should have, you know, even the small countries of this world, Australia, New Zealand, when we get involved in something, they always send troops. Now, it might be three guys, but they always send somebody whatever they can. And that's my point. And that was the point that I was getting from Donald Trump. Maybe I'm missing it, but it seems to me that he's saying everybody needs to step up and be involved. Now, watching the first... Let me back up, actually. You were on the floor there at the RNC, and after the speech by Donald Trump, all of the major newspapers in America, not by accident, I might point out, used the term dark, a dark speech, a dark message, a dark this, a dark. You know, telling the truth about what's going on in the world is not a dark message. Telling the truth that Islamic terrorism is alive and well, and just yesterday, a priest is butchered and beheaded in Normandy, France, after being made to kneel in front of his worshippers in a Catholic church in France. So it happens all too regularly. There have been like four terrorist attacks in Germany in just a week's time. And when Donald Trump talks about the truth, it's called a dark message. On the first day of the Democratic National Convention, foreign policy and terrorism and ISIS specifically was not mentioned one time. What do you make of it?
Well, I don't think that Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party want to talk about the threat from radical jihadists. When they took office in 2007, there were roughly 3,700 people per year that were losing their lives as a result of radical jihadists. Libya was a rock of stability. Syria was stable. Iraq was stable as long as there were U.S. forces there. Today, roughly 28,000 to 30,000 people per year are being killed as a result of radical jihadist activities. Libya is a failed state. Egypt almost became a failed state because of the actions of the Obama administration. But during the time that the Muslim Brotherhood ruled Egypt, they established the radical jihadists established a foothold in the Sinai Peninsula that is still there. Syria and Iraq today are failed states. There's been a genocide against Christians and other religious minorities in that area. There's the caliphate. Yemen is a failed state, and Afghanistan is on its way to a failed state. So, no, this is not a story, a storyline that is a successful line for the Obama administration. So, of course, they don't want to talk about it. And then you talk about the, you know, that's what's going on in the Middle East, and there's the spread of radical Islamic violence throughout Africa, and then all the stuff that's going on in Europe. I'm not surprised that they aren't talking about it. They can't put a positive spin on it.
But how do you ignore it? I mean, you've got these attacks, you know, in Orlando, in San Bernardino, and the list goes on and on, as you just mentioned. You can't ignore it. I mean, it's... Even Democrats realize there's terrorism.
Yeah, well, you would think that you can't ignore it, but obviously on Monday night they did ignore it. They didn't mention it, and I'm sure that that oversight will be addressed in the next couple of days, and they'll talk about it. But, you know, Hillary Clinton was the one that, you know, and if you read her emails and the stuff that's been released and the stuff that came out of the Benghazi committee, you know, as Libya was unfolding, their strategy was that this was going to be a huge success story for Hillary Clinton, the overthrow of Gaddafi.
And yet it didn't go that way at all. Now sit tight right there. We're with Congressman Pete Hoekstra. We have to go to a break, sir, so hold on just 1 second. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, former 2nd Congressional District representative here from Michigan for 18 years. Back in a moment right here on The Steve Gruber Show.
The Steve Gruber Show. American values with Midwestern common sense.
It's the Steve Gruber Show, stevegruber.com, the hotline number, common sense hotline number, 888-900-9966. We're on with former Congressman Pete Hoekstra of Michigan, the former chair of the House Intelligence Committee, who I had a chance to sit and have some casual time with in Cleveland and really enjoyed that with you and your wife. It was quite pleasant and able to just kind of talk about some things that I found fascinating. But now you look at, there are some serious questions out there. Okay, so you get this big dump from WikiLeaks of DNC insider emails, 20,000 or so, that show it's dirty in there. It's ugly. It's unkept. I mean, there's racism and there's sexism and there's a fixed system as far as electing Hillary Clinton. I wonder if the RNC emails would show the same, but I don't think so. I don't think Republicans operate the way that the Democrats do at that base level, with a thumb on the scale, and the thumbprint on the scale was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but it goes all the way back to Hillary Clinton, which is why Debbie was picked up and hired immediately by the Hillary Clinton campaign, much to the chagrin of the Bernie Sanders people. But as you look at that, the big pushback from the Democrats is, well, yeah, but the Russians hacked it, avoiding the fact that they wrote these emails and exchanged these emails and talked about these things. But let me ask you, Congressman, about the Russians, about their ability to hack into the DNC and elsewhere. Do you give it credibility? Do you think it's possible?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Russians are very good. The Iranians are very good. The Chinese are very, very good. The top five countries for hacking would be those three, Israel, and the United States. And so, but I think the real thing to think about here, Steve, is look at what someone did with the 20,000 emails that they got from the DNC. Who knows whether it's Russia or not? I think it's absolutely absurd to believe that Vladimir Putin believes that having Hillary Clinton as president would be more damaging to Russia than having Donald Trump, especially after the run that the Russians have been on in the last 7.5 years. But think about it. We have to assume, and this is what you learn coming out of the intelligence community, we have to assume at this point that the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, probably all have 69,000 emails that were on Hillary Clinton's private server while she was, and all these emails that were written during the time that she was Secretary of State, including a couple of thousand classified emails going as far as top secret. They have this. You have to assume that they have this information. And how will they use that information against Hillary, her top staff, and those types of things? Either going through this election cycle, but more importantly, what will they do with it if she actually does become president of the United States?
Even more concerning than that, you know, one of the reasons people go through background checks for high-level security clearance is to see what kind of leverage people could have out there against them. Have you had an affair? Have you done something illegal? Have you kited money? All of those things are questions that come up in a background check for security clearances, because you don't want to be at the mercy of somebody who can blackmail you or coerce you into doing something that is inappropriate for your position. In Hillary Clinton's case, she wouldn't be able to get through some of these background checks for that very reason. And Julian Assange at WikiLeaks says a lot more material is coming. And you wonder if there's more material coming from the Clinton Foundation, because he apparently has information in that regard as well. Now I want to shift gears with you a little bit, because we could talk about that for the next 4 hours, and it would all be relevant. But I want to ask you something. Having been there on the floor at the RNC, watching the evolution of, you know, 15 or 20 Republican candidates being whittled down to one, the one that most people considered the most unlikely when the process began back in the summer of 2015. But here's Donald Trump. He's not a hardcore lifelong Republican. He's not particularly conservative on a whole host of issues. What do you make of it? And let me ask you this. What do you make of Let's Make America Great Again? Make America Great Again. What would that mean to you, making America great again?
Okay, a couple of things. I think that, you know, as Republicans, we're a party that for a number of years has been trying to reach out and expand our base. Talk to the Reagan Democrats again, the blue-collar workers, reaching out to minority voters and those types of things. And actually, you know, the polling indicates, number one, that Donald Trump is reaching out to the blue-collar Democrats, the Reagan Democrats, the Macomb County Democrats again. And blacks and Hispanics are responding to his message, as surprising as that is to some folks. But he's reaching out to people that the Republican Party has been trying to engage with over the last number of years. He's expanding our base and those types of things. Sometimes you're concerned about his orthodoxy as a quote-unquote true Republican. But, you know, the message that he's delivering on trade, that we need better deals and that these are not free trade agreements. These are negotiated agreements where there's lots of winners and lots of losers. And too often we've been losers. I think that's a message that resonates. And so I think that, you know, it's okay. In terms of it being a dark speech, it's not. It's very, very, it's a realistic speech talking about what it's going to take to make America great again. What does that mean? It means that, number one, you know, we have safety and security on our streets, that we are respected internationally. That we are a growing economy, creating jobs and creating a large middle class again. You know, someone from Time Magazine was interviewing people on the floor, and I have not seen the story come out saying, you know, hey, almost the exact same question that you're asking. Well, when was America great? And it's kind of like, well, this sounds like a trick question from Time Magazine, because you'll give them a period of time and they'll find to go back and they'll find all the things that were wrong at that time. And I said, well, you know, back in the late 40s, the late 50s, after America led the world in defeating Nazis and defeating fascism.
That was pretty great. Yeah, we got to leave it right there, Congressman. Okay. A great answer. It's a great answer. Pete Hoekstra, everybody. 18 years as a congressman representing Michigan. Sir, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
It's the Steve Gruber Show.